Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
One of my dad's favorite quotes is saying, you know, when he passes away, he's not really sure about heaven. Heaven actually could be a step down for him because for him, heaven was playing for the Boston Celtics.
That's Karen Russell talking about her father, Celtics legend Bill Russell, in a classic ESPN piece. Russell passed away yesterday at the age of 88. Bill Russell's time in Boston and the impact he made on the team, the city, the sport, the country are actually complicated. Joining us now to help reflect on the Celtics legend's life and legacy, two of the best voices we could imagine for the moment. Howard Bryant is a senior writer for ESPN and sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Howard, welcome back.
Hi, Tiziana. How are you?
Well, thank you. And Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe sports reporter and author of author of Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics. Dan, welcome back to you as well.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us. Listen, I just want to start by giving you both the floor to tell us what's been on your mind over the last 24 hours. And I'm hoping the two of you will talk to each other as well. Howard, why don't you get us rolling?
Well, I was in New York yesterday on the Metro North coming home when I saw the news alert. And it just, I mean, I think, what do you say? When someone is 88 years old, we're all day-to-day at that stage, but it's still just a tremendous, tremendous blow, because now all the emotions are coming back and you're thinking. I think when we were offline, Dan and I were talking about you protect your own time. You protect your time. And, you know, growing up in Boston as a kid, I mean, the specter of the Celtics were everywhere. And I just immediately started thinking about that period, that Bob Cousy is the last remaining Celtic from the 57 team. And we lost Sam Jones last year. We lost Casey Jones in 2020. We lost Tommy Heinsohn. And all of a sudden, you're thinking about that period, and it was so central to everything. And of course, Russell was the center of all of it. And he was the one that was always the start of every conversation, whether you're talking about the Celtic dynasty or whether you're talking about all the complications of race in Boston, or you're talking about the number of championships. And just when you know, Bob Ryan, you know, Dan's colleague, has always talked about how Bill Russell never lost a winner-take-all game. Just all of it. It all just came rolling back for me. And it was just very sad, but also made you think very much about how special that man really was.
How about you, Dan Shaughnessy?
Well, again, I'm a little bit older than Howard, thankfully. He's a youngster by my standards. And I'll tell you, I mean, you know, but growing up in Massachusetts, when I did in the late 50s, early 60s, we had the Celtics. The other teams weren't very good. And they were such a model team and so great for local teachers and coaches and educators, because we had in our midst this group of men. They were Hall of Fame athletes. They were a true team. They taught you how to win, subjugating your ego, how to put team above self. And how, like, Bill Russell was the embodiment of this, because he didn't need the ball. He didn't need the rock, didn't care about touches. Really, his contract, it wasn't ego, wasn't a scoring champion. He was a winner. He would do what it took to win. Watch him in the shot blocking when they show his shot blocks. He's never swatting the ball into the stands to impress the cheerleaders. He's tipping it to a teammate to get the fast break going. And this was the way he played. This is the way he led. Red Auerbach at the top. But until they got Russell, they couldn't get over the hump. Once they got Russell, 11 championships in 13 years. And we can and will go, you know, first black head coach in American sports. You know, his career as a social justice warrior. On and on. Took no quarter, suffered no fools, lived his own life on his own terms. But the greatest winner in American sports history, at the top of Boston's Mount Rushmore, you can go from there. My first instinct was to call my brother. My brother was a 6'1 white pivot man at Groton High School. His idol was Bill Russell. You had to. Your idol was Bill Russell if you grew up and we grew up. And he was just always a part of our culture. And it's weird for me to be living in a world that Bill Russell's no longer living in.
So what I want to do, Howard Bryant, is bring to people who may not know Russell's legacy and history a little bit more of that. I'm going to play a little sound here from, you know, former coach, legend Red Auerbach, about Russell's tenacious defense.
He made the shot blocking an art. He was so outstanding and proved that quickness and finesse and brains was a match for brawn.
And, you know, Russell himself has famously said, I brought the vertical game to basketball, which was a horizontal game. Talk a little bit about his influence on the game with his physicality, his athleticism, his height, and his approach as a center.
Well, he changed the modern game. I mean, what you're watching right now, it goes back. And as much as people like to talk about, oh, well, today's players would just demolish those players back then, don't be so sure. Don't be so sure. And it's not really true. And you think about the way the game was played. There are players who come in and they fundamentally shift what the sport is. We see it today with Steph Curry. We saw it in the early days with Dr. J and all that. And you go all the way back to Russell and you look and you see how the center position was a on-the-floor position. You were applauding George Mikan guy. You were a big, burly guy. You were wearing number 99. And what Russell did was Russell came in and he changed that position. And as Dan was saying, not even offensively. I mean, he could score if he needed to, but what he really did was, I just love the old anecdote that the Celtics used to employ the Hey Bill defense, where whenever one guy got beat, they would yell, Hey Bill, and Bill would just cross the lane and cover. And you know, and just he could guard 2 men at once. And he was the modern guy that really did change how defenses were played, how the game was played. And then on top of that, the transitions game, the Celtics were known, they invented essentially the fast break, and that all comes from defense. It doesn't come from offense. And as much as we talk about Wilt Chamberlain changing the sport in terms of goaltending, in terms of 3 second violation, all of those things, when he came along in 1959, 1960, Bill Russell, as Dan was saying earlier, changed the entire arc of the sport, because the Celtics were a very good team. They had never even gotten to the NBA Finals before Russell.
So let's talk about that for a minute, Dan Shaughnessy. Let's just talk about the record. So Russell plays in college in California, plays in the Olympics. In fact, the Boston Celtics wait for him a couple of months to finish his Olympic responsibilities before he comes to the Celtics. And then just for listeners who don't know, give the litany of rings that are more than fingers over the next several years.
Well, Howard has cited a lot of this, and again, he never lost a decisive seventh game. And you go back to his 56 straight wins at the University of San Francisco, 2 NCAA championships. So every tournament, they win every game. They go to Melbourne, they win every game, come back with a gold medal. As you say, the Celtics waited for him. And as Howard said, they had been very good, a good team, not a great team, not yet. They had Bob Cousy, they had Bill Sharman, they had guys, they had Hall of Famers. They get Russell, and they win the NBA championship in his rookie season. And he's epic in the final against the St. Louis Hawks. And then next year they're going to win again, and Russell hurts his toe or his ankle or something and had to step aside. They lose to St. Louis. Well, then they won 8 in a row, 8 consecutive championships, Bill Russell there. Red's going to retire from the bench. He says, well, who am I going to get to coach Russell? I know, Bill Russell makes him player coach for the last 15 years of his career. And Russell at that point is playing the game and coaching the team. First black head coach in North American sports. And in the final year of his career, they finish in 4th place. They're not that good. They end up in the finals against a Laker team with Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor. They're on the road. They win game 7 on the road, and Bill Russell walks away. You can't do better than that. 11 championships in 13 years, every 7th game, every decisive game, he wins the game, and he walks away at the top of his game.
Yeah, and Dan, you know what I love about that too is the fact that when people try to compare eras, which you should never ever do, but in trying to compare the eras, they say, well, there were only 8 teams in the league back then and you didn't have to go through 18 rounds of playoffs and whatever. But if you go back and look at those finals, go look at those playoff series, every one of them were close. So many of them, okay, they sweep the Lakers in 59, but for the most part, every one of those come down to a game 7. Either Eastern Conference against Philly, against Wilt, or you've got the Lakers. They beat the Lakers every time.
So I want to talk
to your point, to Howard's point, if I can amplify that.
Yeah.
They use that as a talking point when they say 8 or 9 teams in a league. That makes it harder because the concentration of talent is so
exactly.
much greater. When you have 9 teams and now you have 30 teams, there's just more bad teams now. But back then, every team had good players because there were so few teams.
I want to talk about the mental side for just a minute, and then we'll move on to who he was off the court, too. Here's a little sound of Russell himself, Bill Russell, and let me just reset for everybody. We are talking about the legendary Bill Russell, who passed away yesterday at 88. I have Howard Bryant here from ESPN and Dan Shaughnessy from the Boston Globe. Here's Russell talking about his own approach to playing with ESPN.
We shut a guy down, or we block a guy's shot and say, yes, we did that to you. If you come back, we'll do it again. If you come back again, we'll do it another time. So you'll have to try something else to do. That won't work.
So, Dan Shaughnessy, there was an element of making you pay, making you rethink your game, making you, you know, burrowing into your brain. And that's not something I had known as much about Russell until the conversation remembering him over the last day or so.
I'll tell you one that goes to that. One of the few times he was in a good mood around me and around us, I mean, he was storytelling, which was rare. He was in a good place. He came to the Globe telling stories. We could get him to talk about anything at this time. I think he was helping his daughter's mentoring program at Harvard. And he said his favorite story was his regular season game against the Lakers. And the Celtics are down by 2 points, 10 seconds to go. The Lakers have the ball. Well, the play there is you're going to have to foul him or they're going to dribble out the clock, whatever. But Bill Russell during the timeout says, well, Archie Clark's in the game. I know he's a scorer. If I create a path to the basket, he's going to go for it. He's going to go for two more points that they don't even need. They inbound the ball. He creates a path. Archie Clark goes to the hoop. Russell comes up, chase down block. They get the ball back. They score, put it in overtime. They win the game because he exploited the mentality of his opposition. He could think how they were going to think and anticipate what they were going to do. And that stuff worked for him.
Yeah. And on top of that, I think that people, obviously Bill Russell was retired before, you know, I never got the chance to see him play. I was a year old when he retired. But when we think about superstar players, we always think about them in terms of scores because that's what superstars do. But not Russell. Russell in the championship game in 69 when they beat the Lakers, he scored 6 points. He had 21 rebounds. He had 6 points. And so what he did was constantly take away what the other team was doing. He made you think about him more than he thought about his own offense. And that's really, really rare. And it's especially rare today when all we do is focus on offense. He's one of the handful of players that you could look at and say was one of the greatest players of all time and, as Dan was saying, didn't need the ball. And yet, when it was time to do something, go back to 62, 30 points, 40 rebounds. If he needed to put the ball in the basket, he could.
So I'm just going to quote him from a story that Bob Ryan wrote for the Boston Globe in 1999, where Russell said, quote, people talk about my scoring. I could have scored more. Say I averaged 16 points a game in an average year. If I wanted to go to 19 or 21 a game, I'd have to take 4 or 5 more shots. That would have disrupted the offensive continuity of our team. My idea was always for the energy to flow from me to them, end quote. Kind of underscoring your point there, Howard. And I'll stay with you for a minute, because in our remaining time, I don't want to miss who else Russell was and the price that he paid in his legend for being a Black activist, for being a Black man first, breaking ground in the NBA, for not being quiet about his experience in Boston. Reflect on that a little bit.
Well, it's not just Boston. And I think that to remember Russell is to understand that the most important thing about Bill Russell was that he was a Black man born in 1934 in Monroe, Louisiana. And I say that because there are a lot of Black people who were born in 1934. But the thing about Russell was that he carried it with him. He did not play the game where he was going to allow his celebrity or his fame to make everybody else feel better about his fame. He was like, no. I am who I am because you are who you are. He lives in Louisiana. They moved to Oakland because of the violence in Louisiana. He lives in West Oakland because Black people aren't allowed to live anywhere else. He's playing in Boston because St. Louis is so racist, they're not going to draft perhaps the greatest player of all time, and they end up drafting him and then trading him to the Celtics. So every step in his journey has some sort of racial element to it. I mean, think of how different the history of the NBA would be if St. Louis kept Bill Russell. Mm.
So, Dan Shaughnessy, I want to pick up on that. Boston Globe columnist Renee Graham tweeted yesterday that fans in a city where Bill Russell played his entire unparalleled career, routinely called Tom Brady the GOAT, is such a tell about Boston. We know that Russell loved the Celtics, but that he had a hard relationship with Boston. For example, in the town Reading where he lived, he was both honored and his home was vandalized and people defecated in his beds. And it was a complicated history. Have we consistently shortchanged him and his place in the Boston pantheon?
Oh, I think that's a fact. I mean, the fact that there's arguments about the greatest athlete of all time. We have the Mount Rushmore. Every city's got him. We happen to have Tom Brady in football, Bobby Orr in hockey, Ted Williams in baseball, and, of course, Bill Russell in basketball. Some people would even put Bird in there. Like, no, Larry Bird was great, but he's not Bill Russell. He didn't win 11 championships. So you've got that. And when you pile in all the championships, the leadership, the coaching, it's just he pretty much dusts off everybody. Not the greatest individual player. And the GOAT thing with Brady, that's quarterbacks. Michael Jordan is supposed to be the GOAT in basketball. So I don't conflate those things. I don't, Boston was not the perfect place for Bill Russell to start his NBA career. Everybody knows that. You know, they weren't ready for this. And as Howard pointed out, he did not suffer fools. He was not going to just, you know, make people feel better so they would feel better. So he let them know, this man, read his books, read his writing, read The Diary of an Opinionated Man, Second Wind, with Taylor Branch. Read that book and he'll tell you. He said Boston was a flea bag of racism. And he was right about what he was saying at the time. He grew into it a little more. There was a little more forgiveness later on, but he wasn't going to just say, hey, everything was great, because it wasn't.
And Howard, I wonder now, he was socially active. He marched with Martin Luther King Jr. He stood up for Muhammad Ali when Ali refused to fight in the Vietnam War. You think to somebody like Patriots safety Devin McCourty today, who uses his platform as an athlete and as a black athlete to talk about criminal justice reform. Do we not have a Devin McCourty today if we didn't have a Bill Russell then?
No, that's a lineage, and you have to have that lineage. It's the reason why these black athletes always have a responsibility that other athletes don't have. That why does this always land on their shoulders? Because they are always so visible. I always say it, that the black athlete in the United States is the most visible, most successful, and most influential black employee this country has ever produced. And part of the reason is because of the responsibility that these players have placed upon the future generations, that what Jackie Robinson did spurs on Bill Russell, which spurs on Muhammad Ali, and you feel like you have a responsibility to live up to that. And if you don't live up to that, people will remind you that you didn't. Just go ask Michael Jordan. And so the Russell impact is just so enormous. We could talk about this for an hour.
Let's bring it back to the game as we go out here, because he also really called out players to be as passionate for the win as he was. And I want to go out on a little bit of sound. This is a moment between Russell and Kevin Garnett, another player known for leaving it all on the court. This is from 2008 when the two were in conversation about what it means to play for the Celtics.
I'll share one of mine with you.
Sorry.
This is a genuine friendship thing I'm talking about.
Sorry.
But if you play the way you play and you dedicate yourself to doing it, they will come. It's like they feel the dreams. If you build it, they will come. You may have to put your arms around a couple guys and take them with you, but you can't drag them. You got to put your arms around and take them with you. Okay? And you have no idea how proud I am of you. I couldn't be any more proud of you than I am of my own kids. And I see you at number 5. That's close to 6.
The voice of Bill Russell himself, who died yesterday at 88. Any final thoughts from either of you, Dan Shaughnessy, Howard Bryant?
Well, that was beautiful to hear. And, you know, Garnett had the fire, so Bill Russell could see the fire in him. And imagine being young Kevin Garnett and hearing those words come from Bill Russell. That would motivate you to go out and do something.
Yeah, 100%. I remember when Garnett came to the Celtics in the 07-08 season, just watching him. I said, I've never seen Bill Russell play, but that's really probably what it must have been like, watching somebody just dominate, you know, the defensive board and letting everybody know that that your presence is here defensively. And I just love that because he embraced it so much. I mean, Garnett really did take on that mantle. For someone who wasn't here that long, he's a true Celtic in the Russell mode.
All right. Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN. Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe sports reporter and author of Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics, helping us remember Bill Russell today. The true Celtics great. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.